All right. For those of you who have your Bibles, we're going to go to 1 Samuel 17. Now, I have a lot to read, and I'm going to do my best to cover this as best that I can. But I've been waiting to share this with you guys because a while ago I went to a church in Patterson, and I preached it and had this message. And I felt like I really wanted to share it at Rescue to you guys, but I felt like it wasn't the right time. So I was thinking about preaching through the book of Galatians because we had talked about Galatians. And I was getting ready to do that today. I was getting ready to start Galatians 1 and just go through the book. And the Lord said, no, I want you to share this. So I feel like that there is something prophetic about what I'm going to share. So you may identify yourself in this story. There may be a verse. There may be something going on in your life. There may be something that is specific to who you are and where you are that God wanted you to hear today that is for right now. And I genuinely actually believe that. And I know that God knew exactly who would be here, who would not be here. And so I'm confident in the Lord's faithfulness that there is something that He wants to say to every one of us here. And what I find is that when you look through the scriptures, you see just the faithfulness of God time after time after time after time. And it seems as if something impossible, you know, is happening, and then God shows up. And then again, you know, people's back are to the wall, and then God shows up. And I just want to say one thing to you before we get into this word today, that God is faithful. And I know that for some people that sounds like a religious church phrase that we hear, God is faithful, amen. But let me tell you something. When your back is to the wall and you really need God to come through for you, God is faithful. You understand what I'm saying? I'm talking about when you have bills that are due and nobody knows that you need $1,000 tomorrow and you don't say a single word to not one person. And someone walks up to you and hands you $1,000. All right. Or you go and, I mean, I just want to tell you that God is faithful and that He can be trusted. And this is not just some sort of a story somewhere. This is like, first of all, documented history, number one. Number two, aside from it being history, it's also reality. And with the truth and with the testimonies of the Lord, when you hear a testimony that is truly from the Lord, it's actually a prophecy that what the Lord has done before, He'll do again. And so there is a prophetic nature to the testimonies of the Lord. And here's the reality. The reality is all of us in life have believed for something and it hasn't happened. Every one of us has went through something where we're like, why? We don't understand. And there's pain, there's shame sometimes, there's disappointment. We have all been through incredibly difficult things. All of us on some level, in some way, are hurting. All of us have a sense of vulnerability in an area of our life. All of us are up against a battle. In other words, there is something that is telling you, you're going to be single. You're going to be broke. You're going to stay depressed. You're going to stay addicted. You're going to stay fat. You're going to stay stupid. You're not smart enough. You're not pretty enough. You're not young enough. You're not this enough. And this that voice that says this stuff to us over and over and over again. And so if we're honest with ourselves, all of us have a battle that we are up against. We all have something that is occupying our promised land. We all have something in our life that is basically saying, God can't be trusted. This whole thing is a sham. Look at you. Look at this area of your life. Nobody knows about this area of your life, but I know. Nobody knows about this addiction that you have, but I know. And that voice, that accusing voice, is talking to us day in and day out. And so I want to share this with you because I feel like there's something that we need to see so that we can be aggressive in faith. Faith is always moving forward, and faith in and of itself, the nature of faith is that it's aggressive. It's not passive, right? And so if you want something, practically speaking, in this life, you got to go up and get it. You got to get up and go get it. You got to go after it. And it's the same thing with faith. Faith is not a vague belief about something that will happen in the future. Faith is what we believe about right now. And faith is what we do with what we believe about right now. And so if you go to 1 Samuel 17, Many of you know the story of David and Goliath, where David goes up against Goliath and he kills him. But there is so much in this story, all right, that is nuts. And I want to explain to you, first of all, David's name, it means loving. Loving. The name David means loving, all right? Now, the word Goliath, right? You know what Goliath's name means? The word Goliath means exile. Now, what is exile? Exile is if I come and take you captive and make you my slave, right? So exile is when the people of God were taken from their land, from their home, and they were put in bondage. Now, what's even worse than exile is what Rome did. Rome came and conquered them from within and said, we're going to rule you in your own neighborhood. So it would be like you getting robbed on someone else's block. That's not good, right? But I'm in a New Jersey, New York, this thing, versus you getting robbed on your own block every day, right? So I want to paint the picture. So now in this time, the city of Jerusalem does not belong completely to Israel. So it's like split. It is not an uncontested city. They are not ruling the city. It's kind of like up for grabs. And so there's a whole bunch of things that is happening in the midst of this story. And there's some real keys in this story that teach us how to humble ourselves, how to position ourselves so that we can enter into the greater things that God has for us. All right. 1 Samuel 17. Now the Philistines gathered their armies together to battle and were gathered at Succoth, which belongs to Judah. Verse 1, what's happening? The enemy is occupying their praise. Judah means praise. The enemy is occupying their place of praise. The enemy is occupying their geography, which means there could be something that belongs to you or belongs to me that the enemy is actually occupying. Which belongs to Judah. They encamp between Succoth and Azekah in Ephraim, I don't even know how to say that. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together, and they encamped in the valley of Elel, and they drew up in the battle array against the Philistines. Verse 3, the Philistines stood on one mountain, and Israel stood on the other mountain, and in between them was a valley. All right. So geographically speaking, both armies are positioned. They're looking at each other from the mountain, but the real battle is in the valley. See, you encounter God on the mountain, you get vision on the mountain, but real life, fruit doesn't grow on the mountain, fruit grows in the valley. The valley is the place of vulnerability. The valley is the place where you're exposed. The valley is a place of danger. They could take arrows and shoot them down. So the valley is a dangerous place, and there's a battle that's about to be fought, and this battle is going to be fought in a valley, not on a mountain. So both armies are sitting there looking at each other, and verse 4, and the champion went out from the camp of the Philistines, named Goliath from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. He had a bronze helmet on his head, and he was arrayed with a coat of mail, and the coat was 5,000 shekels of bronze. So his armor in U.S. pounds actually weighed 126 pounds. So this guy is 9 feet, 6 inches. He's somewhere between 9'6 and 9'9. He's huge. He has armor on him that weighs 126 pounds. And you're about to read. Okay. And he had a bronze armor on his legs and bronze javelin between his shoulders. Now the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his iron spear had weighed 600 shekels, and a shield bearer went before him. His stick, okay, weighs 15 pounds. So if you hit someone with a stick that weighs 15 pounds, you'll kill them. Are you tracking? Imagine you take a 15-pound dumbbell and smack someone in the head with it. They're going to die. So this guy is so big that he has a little guy, who normal-sized person like us, who walks in front of him with a shield. Are you catching the picture? So this guy has a big stick in his hand. He's fully armored out. And he has a little person like us who walks in front of him with a shield to, like, protect him. All right? And he's talking junk. Then he stood and cried out to the armies of Israel and said it to them, why have no one come out to battle? Am I not a Philistine? and you the servants of Saul. Choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me. If he is able to fight with me and kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I will prevail against him and kill him, then you shall be our servants and serve us. And the Philistine said, I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. When Saul and all of Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. So Saul, the way he became king is he lost his father's donkeys and went wandering off to go find his donkeys, and a prophet Samuel anointed him to be king. It is the direct opposite of how David was chosen to be a leader. David was found faithful in his father's field, and God passed over all of his brothers and anointed him the youngest one. David went through testing. Saul went through no testing. So now he's up to battle and he doesn't know how to act. He's afraid. So he's the go-to guy. He's the guy who's leading Israel and he's afraid. That's why it's important. Be careful who you follow. All right. Now, David was the son of Ephraimite of Bethlehem. You know what Bethlehem means? The house of bread, where bread is made. Bethlehem of Judah, whose name was Jesse, who had 8 sons. And the man was old, advanced in years in the days of Saul. The 3 eldest sons of Jesse had gone to follow Saul to the battle. The names of his sons went to battle were Eliab, the firstborn, next Abinadab, and the 3rd Shammah. David was the youngest, and the 3 eldest followed Saul. David continually went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. Now, this is a very interesting season in his life because there is a shift happening in his life. There is a change happening in his desires. So he's a shepherd. He watches sheep. Are you tracking with me? He has a job. He has an occupation. But there's something that is stirring within him where he finds himself interested in something that is different than his normal occupation. But instead of neglecting his responsibilities and just, you know, being gone with the wind, he says, no, I've got to be faithful with my father's sheep. I've got to feed my father's sheep. But there's something happening within me. I'm finding myself interested in a different trade, a different profession, this battle. And this whole thing of the army. So there's something going on in him, yet he doesn't neglect what God had already called him to do. Very important. Really, really important. Sometimes we neglect what God has called us to do for some better opportunity, and that is not faithful, and God cannot promote someone like that. Verse 16, and the Philistines drew near and presented, and the Philistine drew near and presented him 40 days, morning and evening. So this guy for 40 days is talking junk, day in and day out. In the morning and in the evening, he's talking smack and he's blaspheming Israel and the God of Israel. 17, then Jesse said to his son David, take now for your brothers an ephah of this dried grain and these 10 loaves and run to your brothers at the camp and carry these 10 cheeses to the captains of their 1,000 and see how your brothers fare and bring back news of them. Now Saul and they and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines. So David rose early in the morning and left the sheep with a keeper and took the things and went as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the camp as the army was going out to fight and shouting for battle. Again, what do you see? He's going and he's obeying what his father is now telling him to do, yet he does not neglect the sheep. He makes sure that the sheep are taken care of. He entrusts someone to watch over the sheep because they're not his. They're his father's. There is an understanding of stewardship that is necessary if we're going to be promoted into the other things and the greater things that God has for us. If we cannot steward the season of life we were in now, if we cannot steward what God has given us now, we cannot receive anything greater. This is an important principle, very, very critical. 21, for Israel and the Philistines had drawn up in battle array, army against army. Watch this again. And David left his supplies in the hand of the supply keeper, ran to the army, and came and greeted his brothers. So the stuff that he brought from his father, he made sure that it was put in the hands of someone who would watch over it so that it could go to the people that it was sent to. Again, what do you see? You see faithfulness with what has been entrusted to him. Faithfulness. This is really critical. Because when we are faithful, we experience the faithfulness of God. When we are not faithful, we do not experience the faithfulness of God. Now, that doesn't mean if things don't go our way, God isn't faithful. And I'm not trying to say that so we can get super introspective, but I'm saying, for example, God loves everyone. But you know the people who experience the love of God? The people who decide to love God back and respond to his love. All right. Then, as they talked with them, there was a champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, coming up from the armies of the Philistines, and he spoke according to the same words. So David heard them. And all of the men of Israel, when they saw the man, they fled from him and were dreadfully afraid. So Saul is afraid, and the people who are following Saul, they're afraid. So the men of Israel said, "Have you seen this man who has come up? Surely he has come up to defy Israel, and it shall be that the man who kills him, the king will enrich him with great riches, will give him his daughter, and the king will give his father's house exemption from taxes. Also, that family would be relieved of military duty." So there was a lot in it for the man that would kill Goliath. Then David spoke to the men who stood by him, saying, "What shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel?" Now, a lot of times when you hear the story of David and Goliath, you do not hear when the reality of David's first question is this: what's in it for me? You just hear, "Oh, he killed a giant." Well, wait a minute. He also said, "What's in it for me?" It's a fair question. It's not a bad question. What's in it for me? Sometimes we're so religious that we're scared to even ask that question. Somebody's hearing me. All right. Then David spoke to the men who stood by. All right, we read that. It's 27. And the people answer with him this manner: "So shall it be done for the man who kills him." Now, Eliab, his oldest brother, heard when he spoke to the men, and Eliab's anger was aroused against David, and he said, "Why have you come down here, and with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your pride and the insolence of your heart, for you have come down to see the battle." Get ready. Listen, if you are a person who is courageous and who is ready to do something new and to do something different, get ready to be misinterpreted by someone who is fearful. Someone who is fearful will always misinterpret courage or confidence. It will always come off to them as arrogance or pride because they're afraid. All right. It's interesting how his older brother has the courage to get mad at his younger brother, but he's not mad at Goliath. Interesting, right? And sometimes we can be just like that. As married men, we can be short with our wife. We can be sometimes disrespectful to people who are close to us. But when we're out there, we're not like that talking to people. Sometimes we get mad at the wrong people. That's a cowardly thing to do. I've been guilty of it. We've all done it. But now he's mouthing off to his brother, and he's angry at his brother, but where's all his courage with Goliath? He doesn't seem angry at Goliath. He's angry at his younger brother, thinking that he's interpreting how his brother is really feeling and what his brother's really thinking. Presumption is a dangerous thing that is very destructive to personal relationships. It's much better to ask questions than make assumptions. And David said, what have I done now? What did I do to you? Why are you so mad? Is there not a cause? Then he turned from him toward another and said the same thing, and these people answered him as the first ones. Now, when the words which David spoke were heard, they reported them to Saul, and he sent for him. Then David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him, for your servant will go and will fight with the Philistine. Do you see how he comes in low? Your servant. I'm here for you. You see that? You see, it was humility that put him in position for God to exalt him. He starts as a pizza delivery boy bringing cheese and bread to people. Sometimes in the menial tasks in life, there's a setup if we can see it. Sometimes you can be doing the most menial thing. You can be doing something that seems completely 100% insignificant, and God is seeing if you will humble yourself so he can get you in position. If you're not faithful with little, you will not be faithful in much. If you can't make sure that those sheep are taken care of and that cheese and that bread is being watched, you can't. You can't be entrusted with a storehouse. You cannot. If you don't serve well, you can't rule. And David said, okay, hold on. Let no man's heart fail. Okay. And Saul said to David, you are not able to go against this Philistine to go fight, for you are a youth, and he has been a man of war since his youth. So now, who's doubting him? His father doubted him from the very first time the prophet came to his house. In his father's mind, he didn't even exist. The prophet said, bring me all your sons. They left David in the field. So the seemingly insignificant one is the one who's getting ready to rule. The humble boy, the little pizza delivery boy, who's bringing pizza and cheese, you know what I mean, wheat and cheese to his brothers, is getting ready to slay a giant, but people couldn't see it. And the first people he told it to, they were like, you're just proud, you're just this, you just came up here to see it. And then Saul, the leader, the great encouraging leader that he is, says, you're not able to fight against him. Let me say this to you. Do not ever let someone who didn't tell you that you can't. Never take counsel from someone else's fears. I'm not going to take counsel from your devils. I'm not interested in that. How am I going to tell? Imagine someone who is not even living for Jesus, has no interest in doing anything about Jesus, and I'm going to let them tell me how to live my life for Jesus? I don't think so. Not actually. Don't ever, I'm telling you, please, I'm pleading with you, don't ever take counsel from someone else's fears. Don't ever let someone who is afraid tell you that you can't. If someone who's been there and done that says, hey, wait, maybe you want to listen. But someone who doesn't know what they're talking about? No. But David said to Saul, again, he comes in low, your servant used to keep his father's sheep, and when a lion and a bear came and took a lamb out of the flock, I went out after it, struck it, and delivered it from the lamb from its mouth. And when it arose against me, I caught it by its beard, struck it, and killed it. Your servant has killed both lion and bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, seeing he has defied the armies of the living God. Moreover, David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. Now, what does David do? David, immediately, when the pressure is on, starts to rehearse his history. The very thing Saul did not have. Saul was untested. Saul had no history. Saul was not a worshiper. And the only time he used worship was to draw the people to himself. He had no private time with God. He had no secret place. He had no relationship with God. He only lived in front of the people and for the people. He was the people's choice. He wasn't God's choice. The people said, we want a king. And God said, okay, take Saul. But David was God's choice. So you have the difference between man's choice. Man's choice will not be a worshiper. Man's choice will be untested. Man's choice will be tall, dark, and handsome. God's choice will be hidden, will be little, will be insignificant, will be forgotten and looked over by his own father. But he'll have history. He'll have intimacy. See, no matter what you're going through, no matter what you've been through, what God is doing is God is building history with you. You see the same thing in the New Testament. Every time Paul the Apostle is taken before a king, what does he tell? His testimony, his history. He says, you don't understand, I was on the road to Damascus and a light shined on me. And then he begins to tell. Every time he's taken before the authorities, he speaks his history, his testimony. God is looking to build history with us. Because when you have history in God and with God, you're confident in God. When you have history with God, you're confident in God because you've been there before. You've seen the faithfulness of God. Now, what's interesting is when you listen carefully to David's story, David says, I struck the lion and I struck the bear. And then as he rehearses his story, he goes, the Lord delivered me out of the hand of the lion and out of the hand of the bear. Do you see that? How he, and you know what? They're both true. Because the reality is, if you don't fight, you can't win. And if you don't show up to the battle, God will not give you a victory. So it's a co-laboring. It's a working together with God. If you don't show up, you cannot win. If you're not willing to fight, God cannot deliver you out of the hand. If you're passive and you just think it's okay for the devil to just keep talking and keep occupying your land and keep stealing from you, then God is not going to do anything on your behalf. But if you say, enough is enough, I'm not getting robbed or played out anymore, I'm going to get serious about my inheritance, I'm going to get serious about the will of God for my life, I'm going to get serious about the will of God for my family, I'm going to get aggressive in faith, and I'm going to go after this thing, that's when you have victory, that's how you build history. David could have counted his losses, nobody's looking, it's one little lamb, I got a whole flock of sheep, I'm good. But he endangered his own life so that he could be faithful with what was someone else's. And that someone else did not have a whole lot of regard for him, because when they said, bring me your sons, he wasn't even included. So your faithfulness is not determined on how people view you or how people interpret you or how people treat you. It's between you and God. Now, Saul said to David, oh, this is interesting. You know the first thing Saul offers David is covering. Join my network. Let me cover you. Let me give you my armor. Disgusting. And Saul said to David, go, and the Lord be with you. You know that the Lord wasn't mentioned by Saul at all until David came on the scene? The Lord was not really a part of the story until David shows up. So Saul clothed David with his armor, and he put a bronze helmet on his head. He clothed him with a coat of mail. David fastened his sword to his armor and tried to walk, for he had not tested them. And David said to Saul, I cannot walk with these, for I have not tested them. So David took them off. So this is interesting, because this is the same stuff that people do to us in our everyday life. They try to put some sort of a heavy yoke on us. They try to put something on us that doesn't fit us. They just say, all right, let me just give you this. Let me just do this. Just and David, being a man of war already, said, this is not tested. And so I'm not going to use what is not tested. And that's why God couldn't use Saul. He wasn't tested. He wasn't tested. He had no testing. He was anointed. He became king. David was tested. Tested. But what's awesome about testing is testings are not so we fail. It's so we build confidence. It's so we build history. You're tested so that when a next test comes, you can pass. God doesn't set you up to fail. Then he took his staff in his hand, oh man, and he chose for himself 5 smooth stones from the book and put them in his shepherd's bag, in a pouch which he had, and his sling in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. Wow. So first of all, let me just say this. In David's day, besides Goliath, there was 4 other giants. 4. So altogether, there's 5 giants in the land. There's 5 of them. They're occupying God's land. 5 giants. When David reached down and put those bones up, he was saying, all of you are finished. We are going to inherit the land that God promised us. All of you are done. See, now, hold on. He brings his staff with him. You got to think about this. He's going to go stand against a guy who is 9'6". He has 126 pounds of armor on, and he has a 15-pound wood staff that's iron on the part that he hits people with it. And he has a little guy who's holding a shield in front of him. So that staff is like a stick, like a baseball bat, but a little taller. What is he going to do with that? Nothing. If he hits the other guy's staff, it's going to break. If he hits the other guy's arm, it's not going to faze him. He's 9'6". David cannot swing that thing hard enough to even hurt him. That stick will break. It's irrelevant. It has no use except. You know what that staff has on it? You know what that staff represents? That staff represents his history with God. It represents the testimonies of the Lord. It represents the faithfulness of God. Shepherds in those days would carve things that God has done on their staffs. So he took out to battle with him his history and his testimony, his authority and his assignment. That's what he took out with him. His shepherd's pouch, his sling. Now, what's even more fascinating, really fascinating, the ways of God, is that do you know what the law says for someone who blasphemes the name of the Lord? They shall be stoned in front of the congregation of Israel. God is getting ready to execute vengeance upon his enemies. The whole nation was supposed to take the person out who blasphemed the name of the Lord, and the whole congregation was supposed to stone that evil person so that God's name would be feared. Now, why? Was God in a bad mood? No. The Old Testament is about the preservation of a seed. The New Testament is about the revelation of a son. So the law was given so that the seed could then come forth. So that law is what preserved the seed. Paul says it was a tutor or a schoolmaster. And it's not, the real word in Greek is not really like that. It's more like the law was a babysitter for a certain time. The law kept the nation at bay so that grace could come forth. So now the law states that anyone who blasphemes the Lord's name shall be stoned in front of the whole congregation of Israel. So now David has no idea. Saul has no idea. Saul could care less about the law. All he cares about is himself. He doesn't know the ways of God. But God knows exactly what he's commanded in his word, what he's written in his word. Now, when you see that and you read Psalm 19 and you see that the law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul, the testimonies of the Lord are sure, enlightening the eyes, the fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. When you start to see all of how God manifests his faithfulness, it all starts to make more sense to you, right? Now, God knows that he's going to send David out and he's going to get this thing done. But look at how it started in a very unexpected way. You have a guy who's bringing cheese to his brothers. He's bringing, and now he's on the front lines of battle. Just like this, it can happen. Just like this, everything can shift in your life. Just like that, everything can change. It all depends on if we're willing to position ourselves properly, if we're willing to humble ourselves, if we're willing to build history with God when no one's looking. Because that was what positioned David to be different from the people that he was going to then lead. Because if you're a leader, see, the way leadership works is this. You either have top-down leadership where it's oppressive, right? Did you see that Saul was heavy on the taxes? So the reward was you'll be free. But we want more and more taxes. Thing is gonna solve things. So you have top-down leadership that is oppressive, or you have bottom-up leadership that is uplifting. And bottom-up, the way it's manifested, is those people are actually out in front, leading, not telling people what they should do, leading. Let me show you what you should do. Let me slay a giant. That's what you should do. And do you know that all of the men, the four other men who killed giants, all hung out with David? If you want to kill giants, you have to hang out with giant killers. What does Proverbs say? If you have company, you'll be wise if you are in the company of the wise. You are who you hang out with. I minister to a lot of people. My friends are a very select few people. Who you associate yourself with will determine where you're going. It'll be the very thing that launches you somewhere or holds you back. It's very important. Huge. Now, what I like about David is that David is not waiting for the Philistine to come to him. Are you tracking with me? He goes out to him. So faith is aggressive. Faith takes initiative. Faith moves forward. Faith does not capitulate to fear. Now think about this. David cannot fight this guy in hand-to-hand combat. He cannot. He has a stick that weighs 15 pounds. He's 9'6". His arm reach is too long. You can't even get close to him. He'll just kill you. You just come within 10 feet of him. He'll swing the thing and knock your head off. You'll die. He's fully armored. So this is going to have to be a precise thing that's going to have to take this guy down. In fact, his armor, actually, he has a face mask on that covers his face. And he has a helmet that comes down to like right about here. So basically, this is what's up from his pretty much nose area. Top of his nose to like middle of his forehead, that's kind of what's exposed. So he has very little vulnerability. And it's interesting about the enemy, because there's something that you can see about the nature of the devil. If the devil was so confident, why did he have a guy in front of him with a shield? It wasn't even a fair fight. He said, bring one of your guys, but there's two. The devil is like a roaring lion. The devil is not a roaring lion. The devil always tries to use intimidation. He tries to cast a shadow. He tries to appear as if he's something that he's really not. So if you would have fought him on his terms, you're going to lose. But that's not how God was going to fight him. God was going to say, the law says you should be stoned. I'll find someone who loves me to execute my law, and you're going to die. And Goliath is going to die. And that's what happened. So the Philistine came and began drawing near to David. And the man who bore the shield went before him. And when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him, for he was only a youth, ruddy and good looking. So the Philistine said, David, am I a dog that you come to me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, come up, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field. Now, remember when David is talking to Saul, David says this one thing. David says, I'm going to kill this uncircumcised Philistine. Why does he say that word? What does that have to do with the story? The story was, when he said that, he was basically saying that God has no obligation to the Philistines because God has no covenant with them. But to us, God made a covenant in our flesh. He has an obligation to us. And so David had confidence in not only his history, not only his ability, although he had both of those working for him, the roots of his confidence were in the covenant that God made that was in his flesh, on his physical, you know, male part. So he was confident in the covenant that God made. He was basically saying, God is faithful to his word. That's why I can engage in this battle. Not only do I have history, not only do I have intimacy, not only do I have some skill, actually. I've killed a few things. But this guy has no covenant with God. God has no obligations to him. God has an obligation to us to manifest his covenant faithfulness from generation to generation. And it was through David's very loins and through his lineage that the Messiah would come forth. If David would have died that day, Jesus wouldn't have been called the Son of David. God is watching over his word to perform it. So the enemy here, now the Philistine again is casting a shadow. He's saying, I'm going to feed your flesh. And I'm telling you, we hear that voice in our everyday life. This is not going to work. You're going to fail. You're not going to get married. You're going to be single. You're going to stay broke. The church isn't going to grow. You're not going to reach anybody. People don't even like you. Da, 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 da. All that stuff. Blah, 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 blah. That voice on and on and on and on. 45, then David said to the Philistine, you come to me with a sword and with a spear and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts. Man, now that's a loaded statement, because he says, I'm coming to you in the name of the Lord of hosts. So you're coming to me with the strength of a spear, a javelin, and all this stuff, but I'm coming to you in the name of the Lord of hosts. In other words, I'm coming to you in the character of God. The name, the word name has three meanings. It means character, authority, and renown. I'm coming to you based upon the character of God. I'm coming to you based upon who God is. I'm coming to you based upon God's authority, what God can do. And I'm coming to you based on the renown of the Lord. I'm coming after you for his reputation, for his namesake. In other words, I am not fighting for my own victory. I'm fighting for the Lord's name. Now, the word hosts here. This is nuts. You know what it means? The Lord of hosts. It means the Lord of the army. It means the Lord of the hardship. It means the Lord of the waiting time. It means the Lord of the appointed time. It means the Lord of worship, the Lord of the soldiers. It means the Lord over the whole thing that's happening, over the whole scene, over the whole scenario, over everything that is present happening right now. I'm coming to you over the one who rules over all of that. I'm coming to you in his character, with his name, with his authority, with his power, with what he can do, and I'm coming for his reputation. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you and take your head from you. And this day I will give the carcasses of the camp of the Philistines to the birds of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all of the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. Not so that they know that I'm a great champion. Not so they know that I'm going to get, you know, tax-free. Not so they know I'm going to get a new wife. So that they would know that there's a God in Israel. It was for the zeal of the Lord. It was for the name of the Lord. He was motivated by the greatness of the Lord. He was motivated. His motives were correct. And he said, not only am I going to feed you to like the birds of the air, but I'm going to feed your whole crew to the birds of the air. Then all the assembly shall know that the Lord does not save with the sword and spear, for the battle is who? Is the Lord's. And he will give you into our hands. So it was when the Philistine arose and came and drew near to meet David, that David hurried and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. Then David put his hand in his bag and took out a stone, and he slung it and struck the Philistine in his forehead, so that the stone sank into his forehead, and he fell on his face to the earth. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone and struck the Philistine and killed him. But there was no sword in the hand of David. Therefore, David ran out and stood over the Philistine, took the sword from his sheath, Goliath, and killed him and cut off his head with it. Now, I'm going to tell you where that sword appears later, because there's a very interesting thing about where that sword is later. All right. And when the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled. Now the men of Israel and Judah arose and shouted and pursued the Philistines as far as from the entrance of the valley and to the gates of Ekron. And the wounded of the Philistines fell among the road to Shurim, even as far as Gath and Ekron. Then the children of Israel returned from chasing the Philistines, and they plundered their tents. And David took the head of the Philistine and brought it back to Jerusalem, but he put his armor in his tent. When Saul saw David going out against the Philistine, he said to Abner, the commander of the army, Abner, which is father of light, whose son is this youth? And Abner said, as your soul lives, O king, I don't know. So the king said, inquire whose son this man is. Then David returned from the slaughter of the Philistine. Abner took him and brought him before Saul with the head of the Philistine in his hand. And Saul said to him, whose son are you, young man? And David answered, I am the son of your servant Jesse the Bethlehemite. In those days, asking whose son you were meant everything. It wasn't like, where did you go to school? What degree do you have? How much money do you make? That meant nothing. Only thing that mattered is where you came from. Because this is a bloodline culture. It's very different from us. We're not like, it's different. But anyway, so that was what they, who's your daddy? That's what Saul wanted to know. Who's your daddy? Where you come from? What is your identity? In other words. So this is really something here, because here's what David does. David runs out to this Philistine, because we always see, if you ever watch any kids' movies, you see David taking the stone, and he's going like this, going like this, going like this, and then he hurls it at him. Boom. That's not the picture of what's happening. What David is actually doing is he's running forward, and then he takes it out, and as he's running forward, he throws it and hits him, which is a whole different posture. Because he's moving forward, he is aggressive, he's confident, and he knows that the Lord is going to deliver this man. And so he cuts his head off to say, this is final, this is the done deal, right? Now, what's fascinating is that when the Ark of the Covenant is taken by the Philistines into the temple of their god Dagon, the Ark of the Covenant, the presence of the Lord makes Dagon fall, and his head is chopped off. Remember that? Now, what's interesting is that Goliath's sword, you know where Goliath's sword winds up? Goliath's sword winds up in the tabernacle of David in the Levitical city when David is running from his son. When David goes to the Levitical city, there's no weapons there because they're Levites. They don't fight. They just sing. You know, they're not They don't do anything. They just sing there. You know what I'm saying? So the only sword that's there is Goliath's sword. David goes and he takes that sword with him. The same way he goes out to the battle with his staff. What is God rehearsing to him? His history with God. Intimacy with God. Your history with God will determine your confidence in God. Your intimacy with God will determine what you will engage with and what you will be afraid of. This is huge. This is it. Intimacy with Jesus determines what you will engage with or what you will be afraid of. That is critical. God is looking to build history with his people. God is not wanting leaders like Moses going up to some mountain and coming and telling everyone what God said. God is looking for a group of people who want to build history with him. What does Hebrews say? Let us come boldly to the throne of grace. Not let me and I'll tell you what he said. Let us. God is looking to build history with his people. God is looking to demonstrate his covenant faithfulness. God is looking to show us that he can be trusted, that he is worth following, that he is worth being loved. So, now, what does David do? This is a very interesting thing. David takes this ridiculously large head. First, he drags it back to Saul. And show Saul, hey, pal, you know, like, pal, you know, I need the tax-free status. I need your daughter. You know what I'm saying? I need a letter of recommendation because my family's done with the army. You know what I mean? My brothers who are real, you know, angry with me, who, you know, were afraid of Goliath, angry with me, they need to be exempt from this whole war thing because they don't really have it in them. You know what I'm saying? So he drags this guy's head to Saul. And Saul is probably like, wow, this is interesting. Right? I mean, this guy's head is like this. I mean, it has to be. He has to be huge. He's 9'6". But then he does something very, very fascinating. So fascinating to me. He drags a dead guy's head all the way into the city of Jerusalem. What is that? What is that? Like, what is that about? Because remember, Jerusalem does not belong fully to Israel yet. You know what it says? David says, I'm coming for the city. Get ready. We are going to inherit the land. Everything that God promised, those other four giants, they're coming down. I'm coming for the city. And what does he do? He puts courage back into the people's hearts. The people were afraid. Because they followed someone who was afraid. So he drags this head back into the city to put courage back in the hearts of God's people. Because people are afraid. And then later they start singing, Saul has killed his thousands, David has killed his 10,000. Saul didn't like the number one hit on the record list. So he tried to kill him and stuff. He really had a miserable time, you know. I think Saul needed a John Maxwell leadership conference, but he never made it. He never got there. But here's the thing. David drags his head back to the city of Jerusalem that would later be called the city of David, by the way. And it's also the city of the great king, which is referring to David. And it's also the very city where God himself wrote his name in that city. Golgotha, I'm not sure, but I'm almost sure. I could be wrong. I'm disclaiming myself. I'm not certain, but the city of the skull, Golgotha, I think it got the name Golgotha because that's where David drug Goliath's head, and that's the place that Jesus sealed our final victory on that hill. That hill is the same place where the Lord visited Solomon. That is the same place where the Lord visited Abraham when he put Isaac on the altar, Mount Moriah. It's the same geographical place where Solomon built the temple, and it's the same place that Jesus died and offered his spirit from, the same geographical place. And it was named Golgotha, the place of the skull, because that's where David drug Goliath's head. God God wanted to remind David of his faithfulness, because later David was on the run from his son. And he goes to the Levitical city to hide out. And I'm not sure if it's Abiathar. It might be Abiathar, but they give him back the sword. And what does that mean? What is the sword about? The sword, again, is about the faithfulness of God. The sword, that sword was about the testimonies of the Lord. So he put the testimonies of the Lord and the Lord's covenant faithfulness back in the hands of David, saying, you will sit on the throne again. In other words, you will finish well. And that's what I'm saying to us. We will finish well. God will manifest his covenant faithfulness to us. And so here's the reality. Reality is that all of us in our life have something in our life that is talking junk, that is basically defying the faithfulness of God, or saying, you know what, you have no testimony in this one area. You know what, God didn't do it for you. You know what? And here's what I can say. That enemy that wants to bring us into captivity or exile, that enemy that wants to isolate us, that enemy that wants to basically make us, you know, a slave to something, fear, really. We have to be aggressive with that. We can say, Goliath, I hear you and all that. I'm not going to ignore you, but I'm going to come for you. In other words, I'm going to settle this thing. I'm not going to live in intimidation. I'm not going to be intimidated by you. I'm going to come after this. And we have to be aggressive with the things that try to intimidate us. We have to be aggressive with the thing that is trying to occupy our place. I don't know if this is making sense to you, but for some of us, this is something, it could be something very, very, very specific. It could be, you know, a spouse, a family member, a financial issue, an addiction, a disappointment, a loneliness, fear. There could be something. It seems vague as I'm saying it, but for you, for me, it's very, very specific. In other words, there is a serious struggle. There is an ongoing battle. There is something that God wants us to have victory in our lives, so that he can establish his testimony and his covenant faithfulness, so that he can put courage back into other people's hearts. You know, what God does on our behalf is what actually encourages. What is it when someone encourages you? You know what that means? They're putting courage inside of you. When someone really encourages you, they are taking some courage that they have, and they are putting it on your account. They're saying, you can do it, man. Keep going. You can beat this thing, man. I believe in you. You're not who you were. You can beat that thing, man. That voice that talks to you, it can be silenced. That person that is really against you, God can promote you. You just be faithful. That circumstance in your life that's screaming at you, you can have victory in it, whatever it could be.